Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast program. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your peers on the entrepreneurial journey of self-discovery, leadership revolution, and life success. Learn something new from our mentoring conversation today.
Eye-opening for me to hear from people who grew up as believers in this huge institution, the Catholic Church, and for me to be able to listen in to your private beliefs being kind of questioned and shattered, and to be able to help shed some light, but also to hear the beautiful truths that each of you, Mike and Nancy, were able to share. I did a lot of listening as well as talking, and thank you very much for the privilege of being in on this deep and necessary conversation.
Welcome, everybody. If it's Monday, you know what we're doing. We're having a great conversation. I want to open up today's conversation with how we ended last week. So Debbie Unterman is back with us, and so is Mike. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Debbie. Hey, Nancy.
Hey.
So Lin-Manuel Miranda came out with this book, Good Morning, Good Night, Little Pep Talks for Me and You. And I want to read the introduction because it's such a wonderful way to start a conversation. I wanted to wish you good morning. I wanted to wish you good night. I started to write these on Twitter, a way of just being polite. I'm really quite hooked on the Twitter. They should take my phone out and lock it. The biggest distraction for someone like me, an audience up in my pocket. So I start the day with a greeting and end with a night variation. It safeguards my evenings and weekends at home to sign off a mini vacation. The greetings are sometimes flirtatious or cheeky or weirdly specific. They're pulled from my life or my brain or my thoughts, terrifically Twitter prolific. I don't have a book of quotations or wisdom I pull from the shelf. Most often the greetings I wish you are the greetings I wish for myself. So if I write relax, then I'm nervous. Or if I write cheer up, then I'm blue. I'm writing what I wish somebody would say, then switching the pronoun to you. And after a few years of greetings, they started to vary in tone. And people said, Lynn, your mornings and nights are the nicest things up in my phone. Now I get tweets like, this saved me, or often I need this reminder. You tell me I printed this out and I keep it around on my desk in my binder. So you asked, will you make a book, please? I replied, oh, consider it done. Then I reached out to Cassandra Tidland, who literally RTs my best teas for fun. And speaking of best teas and besties, there's besties I've made through my writing. Among them is polymath Jonathan's son, his drawings and words so inviting. Then we sat down together and made this. It's the book you hold in your hands. You can open it at any moment or page with the hope you find something that lands. And it's nice to have things to hold on to, some kindness right here within sight. You can read this whenever you want to. It will be here. Good morning. Good night. Isn't that? He's just so poetic.
Yeah, that is somebody. That's another beautiful right there.
Another great idea like came. So he was just doing this naturally, sending out these tweets.
Okay.
And then he was getting feedback.
Oh.
And that's how he ended up writing this book.
Wow. Fantastic.
So I'm going to share some of his insights as we go along, and I'll finish out the show like I did last week with a little poem from him. I would like to share the three sponsors for this show. It's Payroll Vault, Priscilla Vang in St. Paul. Sales Camp, Ursula Menchez is the best sales camp teacher. She is amazing. Also with helping you with intentions and your belief system around money and generating income. And Annette Rondano is known for offering the greatest metropolitan at the Great Metropolitan Back Rub, which is what the company she founded. She's known by WCCO as offering the best back rubs in the Twin Cities. Woohoo! Who knew? Now we know. All right. So we're back here. We're having some really courageous conversations here. Just to give you a little bit more background again about Debbie, the reason we're pulling her in is she's not only a great friend, she's got a Facebook Live on Wednesday evenings through Truth Telling Wins that she is on air. So 5 o'clock Central Time, 6 Pacific in the evenings for one hour. Or Eastern, sorry. Yeah, Eastern. So tune in to her Facebook Lives every Wednesday. She's distilling the truth of what's going on in the world, and there's a lot going on, right, Debbie?
Yeah, unfortunately, every week there's something else.
Well, and I think that's why you're doing it. We started it together, and I go on occasion. For 6 months, I went on once a week, kind of trying to get a sense of, from a leadership perspective, how do we kind of lead people through these different times? It's challenging, but I just feel so much, I feel really alive, like things are coming out in the forefront in all of its ugliness right now. But I want to give a proper shout out to you, Debbie, that you're a clinical hypnotherapist, author, mediator, speaker, and game inventor. And you like to help people see things clearly in some non-traditional ways. In your book, Talking to Myself, Learning to Love the Voices in Your Head, you describe an array of characters. You say we all have rattling around in our brains, such as the judge, the rebel, the victim, and maybe even a Ms. or Mr. Perfect. As a master alchemist and trainer, you've been delving inside people's head for over the last 34 years. You've achieved proven results with clients who are suffering from a range of post-traumatic stress disorder, sexual abuse, depression, codependency, phobias, anxiety, lack of direction, sex and relationship issues, and so much more. But even though you can help your, what I find wonderful about how you work with people is you help them play with their issues. And you also have done this with hundreds of people by playing your transformational board games of Clarity and Satori, the game of radical forgiveness. Can you tell us a little bit about your games, how you came up with them?
Yeah, you know, it just reminded me of one that I played when a really unfortunate thing happened, that a dog got lost on New Year's Eve during the fireworks. It ran away, this cute little Shih Tzu or some, you know, one of those cute little dogs that was one of my friends. And I felt so bad because I was at a party with her and I was, you know, I told her to come to the party and that was the night the dog got lost. And so I offered to play a game with her, and it said that that the dog would be found, but not in the place where they were looking for her. And this was like, I think, not this last New Year's, but the New Year's before, so 2 years ago, and just recently she showed a picture on Facebook that she thinks she has found the dog. And it was totally in another neighborhood, another town. So that reminded me. I mean, people have gotten advice on so many things. I swear, people have sold houses based on it. They've kept houses. They've gotten into relationships. They've broken up engagements. you know, they've decided to have a business in their home or to go into business. It gives you advice, and it does it in a fun way.
Yeah, which is so, it's just like you. You are fun. I mean, you're so energized and really hopeful about things, and you give such great insights that it makes a person glad to be alive. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
And Mike Cabe is here too. Hey, Mike.
Hi, Nancy. How you doing?
Good. So we're working our way through the grand jury report, but we've also been talking a lot about what we've been experiencing and what we feel in our community of Catholics, what they've been going through. And you had some really insightful things that you would like to learn from Debbie to gain a little bit more clarity on cognitive dissonance. But go ahead with your insights.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure, and it's so important for me. I wanted Debbie to be here because, you know, Debbie is an expert. I want to say that straightforwardly in this domain, you know, working with in terms of psychology and all the problems that are related to it. And the situation we're facing today with the grand jury report brings about a lot of turmoil, I want to say, as far as our psychology is concerned. You may be aware of it, or you may not be aware of it, or you may choose to ignore it, but it's with you. You know, when we were offline, I said something that came up in my mind. I don't know where that came from, but I said, the truth is very stubborn. You know, once that you know it, it sticks with you. There's nothing you can do. It will haunt you down until you recognize it, you acknowledge it. And that's only when you will be given the green light to proceed or to move ahead. That's what it is. You know, having heard what happened to the clergy and the Catholic Church is a big issue. Why? Because most of us have lived holding in very high esteem the clergy, you know. Most people consider the priest like a semi-god, if you will. They wouldn't use those terms, but literally they consider them to be a kind of an intermediary between them and God to some degree, you know. But now all of a sudden, when they struck you with this big truth, when you realize, in fact, that the people you put your faith in, the people you counted on so many occasions, I will tell you, entire families will bank on a priest to resolve all sorts of issues in their families.
Right.
You know, when they have a dispute between men and a woman in their family, most of people will go to see their priest.
Yeah.
You know. They'll go to see the priest, not even thinking, oh, this person is not married. Probably we have more experience in terms of marriage. You know, they don't think in those terms. They go to see this person because they think this person is gifted. This person has been called by God. So this person, he's so, you know,
you want his approval.
You want his approval. It's his like you're graces. Talking somehow to God.
Right.
You know? But in that scenario, when they struck you with this truth, that in fact all these people you've been believing in blindly, in fact, can be criminal, and there are proofs for that.
And they've got a whole playbook.
Yes.
To conceal the truth.
To conceal the truth.
That they've told us we should be saying the truth.
Yes. That's even the most horrible thing.
It's so ironic. Yeah.
That's so manipulative. Like
totally.
You're living the lie.
Yeah.
You know, that's a double life there. You know, presenting one face while you're doing just the contrary.
Horrific things.
You know.
Yeah.
Just so horrific.
Yes.
Now
lying about it.
When you know that, you may choose to ignore that truth. But guess what? You saw it. it's over.
You reap what you sow.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Once you know that truth, it sticks with you. And right. your mind will be reminding you every step of the way.
Not guess what? You.
You saw that. Remember? You heard about the report, the grand jury.
Yeah.
You know? This happens to us all the time. It's like, that's why, you know, having worked in the media, I know that most people have hard time to listen to themselves. You know, like when you do a show. I know, Ness, even you used to have this problem, especially when we began, you know, with the show. You sometimes had time to listen to yourself.
Oh, yeah.
People sometimes have hard time to look at their pictures. Right. I see this all the time.
Yeah.
You know, or their videos. Why? Because naturally, we tend to be so critical toward ourselves. We are very critical.
Yeah.
Because there's that element in us that reminds us the truth. Once you've seen it, you're done. It sticks with you.
Yeah.
And that's what is going to happen to most of us now. Now, it doesn't matter what you do. You may choose to ignore it. You may accept it, which could be, in fact, beneficial if you accept it quickly. Then the process becomes a little bit shorter. You know what's the next step to take.
Yeah.
Down the road. And if you try to refuse that reality, it will stick with you. It will haunt you. It will give you nightmares. It will give you all sorts of problems until you accept it, until you acknowledge it.
Yeah.
You know? But it's good to listen to Debbie, like I said earlier, because she just knows the right words to use, you know. She knows how to dig this thing out. And in fact, what could be the best solution to propose to people. And that's why I'm excited to have here today.
Yeah, excellent. You're a great sidekick.
Am I?
Yes, it's so. Well, it's good to talk about this, you know. We're each sorting it through from different perspectives. Yes. And I really appreciate your insights and being willing to be so courageous on going on the mic and talking about it while you're in process.
Well, Nancy, I'm old enough. Why do I need to be, you know, hiding my face or, you know, keeping that veil on my... Why?
Right.
Who do I have to please? Why?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
It's all about your soul and God. Guess what?
Going directly.
Directly, you know. It's about you and your God.
Yeah.
And should we talk in terms of faith? It's about you and your God. Every other person can be a betrayer, can be a criminal, just like the ones we're talking about right now.
Right.
So let's go ahead and...
Yeah, the truth has been shattered.
Oh, yeah.
Within the Catholic Church, like our faith within... as the Catholic faith to absolve us from our sins,
yes,
it has been shattered.
Oh my God!
That's the sad part.
That's so sad, Debbie.
That first they teach you what is a sin. That's where the cognitive dissonance, I'm hoping, will come in. And I wanted to give you an example that is completely off this topic to show you how cognitive dissonance may be used to set you free from the indoctrination about what is a sin and who are they to tell you. And so the way I learned about it, because like I said last time, I'm a lot older than you. So I'm in college in the 70s, early 70s, 71. And as I'm taking my communications courses and they're teaching us about cognitive dissonance, they're talking about racial riots in Rochester, New York. That's way upstate New York, on Lake Ontario, by Buffalo. And I didn't know about them. They were in the 60s. I was down in Long Island at that time. I'm in Atlanta now. But they said that there was a huge, I don't know if it was 68 or what year exactly, but there was huge racial riots, a lot of tension between the races. And it's not a very black population up there. You know, it's mostly white. So most people had not even known black people. So because of the rioting they saw, they were scared. Hmm. They you know, they basically thought, oh, blacks are violent and, you know, dangerous. And, you know, and so there was hatred. But it was all just out of nothing, out of, you know, because they were rising up to try to, you know, get their own rights and whatever. And people saw them and were scared. So what they taught us was that what can happen is if you meet one nice black person, and in your mind is, oh, blacks are awful, they're dangerous, they're this and that, and oh, I hate them, or, you know, which really there was no reason. They just thought they did. But if you found one friend or someone, you know, a coworker, someone who is black, and you go, hey, that black person is all right, that creates cognitive dissonance. How can you hate blacks if there's one nice black person? That's the cognitive dissonance that can break through the old belief system and shatter it. And so that's what I'm looking at now is, you know, from the outside, what I see of the Catholic Church and what I said last show that I love about, you know, like Catholic Charities. I find them very giving. They really do so much good in the community. But what I also know that Catholicism is almost based on is the idea of sin and original sin and the thought of so many things that can be wonderful being not allowed and creating guilt so that people are living in a body full of guilt over things that were instilled in them, as if a baby born is sinful. That, you know, psychologists are now saying that is one of the, you know, the evils that's being perpetrated through the earth is this idea of original sin. There is no such thing. You know, babies are coming straight from God. There is nothing sinful about them. And so in my life, for instance, I had one Catholic friend when we were all starting to be, you know, thinking about, are we going to have sex or not? And she would be over my house when her boyfriend would be ready to pick her up. She would throw up while he was on his way to come get her because she was so full of fear over sex from the indoctrination she told us about. That at 13 years old, all the girls had to sit in the pews with all the women. And the priest, the male priest, just indoctrinated the whole congregation of females about the evils of sex. And it came out in her body viscerally as throwing up. And we read, you know, from these horrible stories that now, because, and this is another thing that I have to say, is a lot of the stories in these thousands of kids that were abused, they said it was majority boys.
Right.
So what do we have? We have men abusing boys. Would you, I mean, other than the fact that it's pedophilia, let's say, you know, clear and simple, this is pedophilia. This is not homosexuality. But why, if a priest is going to choose, who do they want to play with? A little girl's thing or a little boy's thing? And who do they want playing with their thing? A little girl or a little boy? And because they have taken away the availability of healthy sex for themselves by vowing to be celibate, they are now profusely talking about homosexuality as being a sin while they are diddling little boys and having them diddle them. I mean, this is really evil that homosexuality, in a, you know, on top of the things we talked about last time, we talked about just sex and money, you know, divorce, birth control, abortions, but also homosexuality, huge sin in the Catholic Church. Pray the gay away. You know, and how many people commit suicide? The suicide rate is something like 40% for kids gay kids. It's off the chart. And here we have again a story of one of the boys who was abused. He throws up at the thought of going to church, which he still wants to do, but he has to throw up before it. And I can't remember if that's the same one who can't even touch, hug his own sons or shake hands with another man.
Yeah.
So that's my diatribe for now. That's some food for thought, huh?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God.
I'm hoping that the cognitive dissonance will let people see that maybe some of these things that they were indoctrinated into being sins, maybe they can go, oh, maybe not all gay people are really bad. Or maybe people who use birth control aren't that bad. Maybe having an abortion isn't, you know, in the case of sometimes when it's called for, maybe it's okay. And that they don't have to live in guilt. Yeah. That's where I'm hoping the cognitive dissonance will come through.
Yeah.
And free them.
Yeah. Wow. 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 What an analysis, Debbie. That is profound. And you just, in fact, opened my heart. I hear and I remember about something I read recently. It's this thing, the sin thing, which constituted, mm-hmm. as you said, like the foundation of the teaching in Catholicism. Should we look at it, you know, throughout the course of history? One could also say that it's been used as a means of mass control, in fact.
Exactly.
Because when they tell you that you are a sinner, well, you feel paralyzed and you automatically become dependent on those persons, mm-hmm. should you accept to internalize that concept. But there's a good book out there. I can't remember the names of the authors. These are three theologians, ladies. They are feminists. But I can remember that the title of the book is Proverbs of Ashes, in which they literally attack some of the major doctrines, if you will, including the doctrine of atonement. What is the sense of atonement, you know? Jesus came to die for all sins. Which sins? I mean, these...
yeah.
The sins were committed by supposedly the very first man and woman whom we are coming from, Adam and Eve.
Yeah.
Okay. Why won't the merciful God just forgive them and say, okay, guess what, Adam and Eve, I forgive you for doing this, and let the whole thing move ahead, you know? That didn't happen. So God, should we stick with that logic, God refuses to forgive them. He brings about his own son and inflict upon him the most horrible death, you know, by crucifixion, you know. Jesus supposedly dies for those sins. But guess what? Nothing is even repaired because that was supposed to have saved us. Are we saved? No. People continue to die. People suffer. There's wars all over the place, you know. I'm coming from the Democratic Republic of the Congo, and I can tell you that millions of Congolese died this past decade, and nobody talks about it, okay? This is the world we're living in. So yeah. What has the death of Jesus actually resolved? And it gets even better, because despite the death of Jesus and all the suffering, guess what? There's a hell coming up, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you didn't
number,
have hell on earth.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. It awaits for you, okay?
Yes.
You know,
right.
Hell is coming up.
Right, as it, but it's a fear. It is a fear tactic.
You know.
For sure,
yeah, exactly.
But you'll do anything to stay out of it because they've gotten the fear of God into you. Yeah.
You know, so we have a merciful God. We have Jesus who died because of all of these things. Mm-hmm. But guess what? Only a small minority of people, in fact, will inherit heaven because most of people will be roasted,
in the huge fire in hell. So tell me, logically, what has the death of Jesus resolved? You know? So they keep on putting the psychological burden on people, telling that they are sinners all life along, despite what efforts you do. You know?
And these pedophile priests, aren't they, the fear of hell didn't scare them enough.
Nope.
No, but they'll put it on you. You'll go to hell.
So that's the problem right there. We start, you know, reflecting on every aspect of the truth that we inherited from the church. And one of them is this thing with the doctrine of atonement that, in fact, never showed up over many centuries. That's when it popped up in the Bible. It never existed before. It's in one of the variants of the book of Luke, you know. So I think overall there's been a lot of manipulations too in the church in order to keep people under control.
Yeah.
So, but guess what? Yes. The truth is very stubborn.
Yeah. I just have written an article for LinkedIn, which will be on Mickey Mike Worth's podcast. Yes. I mean, on her LinkedIn.
Yes.
And I'll share it with everybody else. But it has to do with the culture of shame.
Yes.
And Brené Brown came out with Dare to Lead, a new book for 2018, Brave Work, Tough Conversations, and Whole Hearts. And judgment plus silence plus secrecy equals a culture of growing shame.
Yeah, secrecy.
Yeah, and
of course, that's what we were talking about. Secrecy leads to shame, and shame is really hard to heal.
Well, and it's interesting with all the research, you know, tens of thousands of people that Brené has interviewed for her research over the years. She has not found a courageous culture.
Yes.
In work or home. And what she means by that is there's vulnerability, which means dealing with uncertainty, taking a risk, and what we're doing now, emotional exposure, right? We're sharing our emotional selves with each other.
Yes.
And the audience. So vulnerability plus having curiosity plus shame resiliency techniques and trust building tools and practicing our core values and having tough conversations, that's what equals a courageous culture. So I'm thinking,
I'd like to hear her technique.
Yeah, and if we've never been taught it, all that we've been taught is how to bring shame into our families, especially if we've been raised in the Catholic Church. We have been raised to shame our children into conforming.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what's, for me, is like, wow, mind-blowing, is this is like, I'm a German. There are on both sides of my family, there are generations of German Catholics who have passed all these things on.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, there's 1.2 billion Catholics in the world yet. They're all being taught similar things.
Oh, yeah.
By the playbook of concealing truth. So it's not, and if they're good Catholics, they're really doing a lot to conceal the truth from themselves. And I think that's what's been so hard for everybody to try to understand what's going on, is it's such a big truth to get your head around. This cognitive dissonance really is perplexing. So that's why I think...
Well, it is.
Go ahead, Debbie.
It is, because the ideas bounce between your old, belief and the new belief. They flip like a ping pong, so you're thinking... This is true. No, this is true. But how can this be true if this is true? But,
that's what we're doing.
Yeah,
like how Jesus died, right?
Yeah.
Why did he die?
Yeah, why?
What? For our sins? What sins?
What sins?
Yeah.
I had an original sin on me.
Come on.
I mean, you know, now when we talk about it, I'm like, that sounds so bizarre. Like,
it is
really,
bizarre.
We bought into that?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No more.
Well, you know, okay, so I'm coming from the real outside, you know, as a Jew.
You're right.
So, to me, I have Santa Claus as one of the strangest things that people do to kids. That is a lie that is, it's perpetrated by the media, by, you know, by everyone having to worry that maybe there's some kid watching that still believes in Santa Claus. So everybody is keeping
the secret.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's a
huge secret.
Yeah, not interrupting you. I just
come out and either a kid is going to say, you know, sometimes kids get mad that their parents lied to them, or else they feel superior, like, oh, you still believe that? Or it's like, oh, he told me the Santa's not real. I mean, I can't imagine what it's like to grow up having been told such a huge lie, and at some point it gets burst. I don't know. Do either of you have stories? But to me, that is like the craziest thing. We're living in a world that's willing to lie to children.
That was my first big aha of there's something wrong with this faith. That's what I felt. Like, you know, if they feel like they need to lie to us about Jesus' birth and bring into the, you know, the Santa, and then it's so commercially, you know, it's gotten so far from the meaning that was the first really big lie. And frankly, my parents were so mad at me because with Olivia, I said, yeah, there's no Santa.
That's it.
Oh,
you know.
Oh,
I did assist to a dispute, a huge dispute with in a family. You know, spouses. You know, men and wife.
Yeah.
Why? Because the men decided to tell their 6-year-old kid that Santa was not real. This kid started crying, and then it was a huge dispute in the family. The lady was, you know, all over the place. Why would you dare tell him that Santa is not the truth? You know, why entertaining such? It's so stupid. I mean, just call it what it is. Are we to entertain stupidity like this?
No.
Yeah.
I mean, that's part of we have to laugh about this.
Yeah. But what kind of culture are we living in? Never mind the things that, you know, the Adam and Eve story you started talking about that, what did God really, you know, were they really in a garden? Did they really eat the apple? And was it, you know, that's like myth or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
But the Santa thing we are perpetrating today. Every day, and it's going to be coming up. Here I am. On, you know, everyone's going to have to block their kids' ears from you. You're going to have to give a disclaimer. You might have a kid listening in the car. Oh, my God, I might have started something. Look, that Jew, look what she did.
But
Debbie.
But Debbie, even Adam and Eve, that you just called a myth, is a reality for a lot of us. A lot of people still think, but it could be the truth because that's where we're coming from.
You know, I have a little story with that.
You know, like God tells them, go, but don't eat. Did God know that they were going to end up eating from that fruit anyway? Did he know that? If he knew it, why didn't he stop them from eating from the fruit? Which brought all the trouble in the first place. I mean, which God are we talking about here? Is this the merciful God? Is this the God who knows everything, including our thoughts?
Right.
But he failed to know that Adam and Eve would end up eating from that fruit that caused all the tragedy.
I was teaching fourth grade at a Catholic school.
Give me a break.
The priest was talking about Adam and Eve, and he called all the kids bad apples. And so I got the kids came back after church in the classroom. They were all sobbing. What do you mean we're all bad apples? So I got on the phone with the priest and I said, I need you to come over here, and I've got a room full of kids sobbing because you called them all bad apples.
Wow.
and he refused to come over.
Oh, my God.
So I took it into my own hands, and he totally lost credibility with all those kids and myself. But I clarified that, you know, there's some stories that priests talk about that aren't true. This is one of them.
But guess what? They constitute the foundation. Well, I mean, I was just talking about the doctrine of atonement. What is the foundation of that doctrine? You have to believe that Adam and Eve actually were some real person who existed and they committed that. That's why somebody had to come and die to pay off, you know. And
so how do we atone for our own sins? Like, we can never really do enough penance.
Well, I think we need to review the whole theory.
Totally.
That's what I'm saying, that I'm hoping the cognitive dissonance starts making
we need to review
everything.
Yeah.
That apple tree, you know, and let just the good stay and let all those bad apples fall out of your brain that, you know, that you've been indoctrinated into. It's really wild when you start thinking of all of these things. And, it, you know, if you were explaining to somebody who's just come to Earth for the first time and you're telling them all these things that you have learned, and it's just Catholics. You know, that's just one religion, right?
Right.
Then there's going to be other people who don't believe that.
Right. Yeah.
You know, you ever think of that? And as far as who goes to heaven, who goes to hell? So everyone on the other side of the Earth.
Yeah.
Who hasn't been converted is all, you know, the heathens.
Right.
I mean, there has to be something wrong with this picture.
It is so wrong. It is so wrong. We are not allowed to call God the merciful and at the same time imagine that there's a possibility of existence of a hell. These two notions just don't go hand in hand.
No. It makes, Jesus to be, and God to be this horrible being.
They are just another form of human beings with all the limitations, you know?
Yeah.
So God had a good plan of creating people for the good, and all of a sudden, his plan fails because of some entity called Satan. And then all of a sudden, all these beautiful kids are going to go to hell, like the great majority of them. Actually, that's what the teachings say.
Yeah.
A great majority of people are doomed to hell.
Yeah.
You know?
And what is this thing?
That's
your teaching. You know, what about Baptists? I'm here in the South with Southern Baptists. And with Baptists, you have to be baptized or you're going to hell. So we're talking about your belief system you were indoctrinated into. But then there's all these other people that believe that it's only those who are baptized, right? And you're all Christians. You're all believing in the same God and Jesus. And yet there could be divisions even among those beliefs. So really, religions divide. They create a structure that hopefully gives people, you know, a way to do service. Like I say, I want to go back to the best part of the church. Such good service gets done, you know, from donations and from going out and, you know, helping people who are hungry. And yet, if you get into the nuts and bolts of each religion, they're all creating some structure through which you live and live in fear. Again, you don't believe in baptisms, right? You don't get baptized, do you?
Yeah, yeah. We had the same lesson that the Baptists did, you know, that you can be condemned to hell if you don't get baptized.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's why they baptize you, you know, so early, just in case you die.
Okay.
You know, that's the massive group of kids that will go to hell.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine those little kids going to hell?
Like they've done nothing wrong.
Listen to me.
Exactly.
Going to hell forever means that suppose you only lived for, 7 years under the sun, and you're going to be paying for that for the next 3 trillion years. What kind of judge is this? What kind of... No way. Come on.
Exactly.
What? There's no justice here. Right. There's got to be some...
But wait.
There's got to be... Okay, tell me...
Purgatory.
Yeah.
And maybe, maybe you get held in purgatory and it's not so bad. But these are all constructs. I'm telling you, these are constructs that you need to, to have this belief in. It has to be indoctrinated very deeply. And one line that I heard that comes from, I think, about, the first 1,000 years, maybe about 600 or something like that, is that a priest is known to say, or a pope, I'm not sure, give me a Catholic for the first 6 years of his or her life, and I will give you a Catholic for life.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yep. Exactly.
And as you said something similar.
Happens.
You said something similar when we talked here, when we had this show about the grand jury report. You said one of the priests, when they asked him a question, to say, but if Catholics hear this, they're going to leave the church. And he's like, oh, they're going to come back. They're devout. We taught them well.
Right. Exactly. Mm. Yeah, that's the priest. They know that the Catholics, no matter what horrific playbook for concealing the truth that they've laid out, they have indoctrinated them so thoroughly that they will never get out of it.
Yeah.
So, well, as you can hear... we're still sorting through this, and
it's a lot. It's a lot.
There's a lot, and that's why we're.
This is messing with your heads. This is totally messing with your heads. I'm very sorry for you having to, second guess everything that you've been taught, because it's so much nicer to just keep being a believer.
Yeah,
it's so easy.
Well, and that's where the spiritual work is. We have to resurrect our own souls. We're here to do the work. Mm-hmm. We're not responsible for everybody else's soul, and no one else should be telling us how we resurrect our own soul. I think, would you like to present your offer for the audience? I think that this would help with sorting out the cognitive dissonance of...
I'd also like to, if I have about a minute more, Alice Miller is a real advocate for the child. She has helped to, advocate and let people know that the world is really against children. And what she wants, and this is, it goes with what Mike was saying about the truth. He kept saying about once you know the truth. But the thing that has come out so much in this was that it doesn't always come out till people are sometimes 70, 80 years old. But what Alice Miller has said against poisonous pedagogy is how she says that the world is about children. She coined that term, about that people hate children. They'll do anything to them. Just consider them not, moldable and liars or they don't give them any credit. Hmm. But so what people can do to children by hurting them, because they don't think that they're going to remember, is that, and this is, I'm reading this paragraph, the truth about our childhood is stored up in our body. And although we can repress it, we can never alter it. Our intellect can be deceived, right? That's what we're talking about with the cognitive dissonance. Our feelings manipulated, our perceptions confused. That's what I'm saying. I got these two thoughts. And our body tricked with medication. But someday the body will present its bill, for it is as incorruptible as a child who, still whole in spirit, will accept no compromises or excuses, and it will not stop tormenting us. Now, that's that inner child, until we stop evading the truth. And so my offer for people who may have a truth coming up in them that they just don't have anyone to talk about, but they have this stuff that's coming out, as illnesses, stomach aches, headaches, migraines, rashes, whatever. And they know they need someone to talk to, as I'm saying, that I'm going to do a special of talking to you for 70 minutes over Skype or the phone, but Skype is always good, for $100. You can pay by PayPal.
Excellent.
That's my offer.
Thank you for offering that. And once you've gotten some help from Debbie to sort those pieces out, especially if you're in a leadership role, I would like to invite you to join a We Mentor Entrepreneurial Leadership and Mentoring Lab, where we're having really tough conversations. We're doing brave work, and we're building courageous cultures from the ground up, because these are skills we've never been taught, and we're in a very extremely shaming culture. And so there are specific skills that we can learn that will help us become shame resilient. And to end, thanks, Mike, for your generous spirit and your courageous insights that helped move our conversation to a wonderful depth.
Yes,
well, thank you, Nancy. I think all the credit to David tonight.
Yeah.
For participating here and, bringing to light so many concepts that are crucial in the understanding of what's going on right now with our Catholic faith and all the grand jury report that we read and we've been discussing about.
Yeah, from Pennsylvania.
Yes.
And I apologize if I offended anyone. You know, I know I can sometimes just speak my truth, and I'm sorry if I offended anyone. I'll apologize.
We'll see you next Monday. Thanks, everybody.
All right.